Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Dustin Schutte. Dustin, how are we doing this week?
The calendar has flipped to March. This is my favorite time of year, Jim, so I am doing great. Before I ask you this, do you know what's funny to me, Jim, is now you told me the story, and I don't know if you told this on air or not, but that you had an opportunity to go see Christian Laettner and hit that big shot against
yes.
Kentucky, and you missed out because of your better half. And she also now she refers to it as March Hoopies.
Yeah. So
every time March goes, I think to myself, and I'm like, oh, time for March Hoopies. That stuck with me because it's such a funny phrase to me. So now I'll ask, how are you?
I am fine. And if I haven't told the story on the air, the quick short version is 1,000 years ago, for those who are old enough to remember, the was a Grant Hill to Christian Laettner making the last second shot against Kentucky. One of the great moments in college, March Madness. It was actually played in Philadelphia at the Spectrum. And I was living in Philadelphia at the time with that, with an opportunity to go to the game. I had a friend who had tickets and I had asked a girl out for a date on that night already. And I didn't want to be that guy. And I missed the game, maybe the greatest game in March Madness history. And she wasn't a big sports fan, and I never let her forget about it. And when I get pissy in March, and she says, oh, is it time for March Hoopies again? So that's how March Hoopies came about with Dustin. Dustin, a big basketball guy, works out in the Midwest, a Purdue guy, Purdue follower. How are your Boilermakers doing, Dustin?
Well, it's very streaky. They started out the year 17-1 and look like a team that could make the Final Four. The last 11 games, they're 5-6. They've lost three of their last four. Two of those losses were to Michigan and Michigan State, so good teams, but you got both of them on your home court. You'd like to at least split. So I always preface this by saying I think they're what are now 22-7, if I have my math correct, with two games to play. 22-7, there are 85% of schools, maybe even higher, would take that in a heartbeat. But because of the expectations at Purdue, because of how successful they've been the last couple of years, not winning a Big Ten championship, and then having this kind of struggle at the end of the season, there's a lot of panic around the Purdue basketball. So we'll see how it goes. There's plenty of time to right the ship, but there are some glaring concerns about the Boilermakers right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, as a Penn Stater over here, part of the 85% that would gladly take 22-7. Not a good year for the Nittany Lions, although they did get a nice win against Iowa on their home court. But, tough times for the Nittany Lions. Let's move back, though, to football. That's what we like talking about, Dustin. And, you know, it was interesting, and I will – give credit where it's due. For today's show, what I wanted to talk to you about, The Athletic came out, Stuart Mandel, a very good college writer, came out with what he was calling his 10 commandments to improve college football. And then they had another one of their writers go over the list, do his critique. So, hey, there's nothing like some good plagiarism and stealing of ideas here, Dustin. I thought I would steal that idea, take a look at these things. And by the way, many of these just hit very close to what you and I have talked about before, what we had as our ideas. I want to put these to you, Dustin, get your reaction. And you know what? You're a smart guy. Maybe you have even better ideas. And maybe the good folks in the NCAA are listening to us and will take up our ideas. Let's start with this. Thou shalt have a 12-team playoff for at least the next decade. and the event shall be moved up by a week to allow the season to end on or around January 8th, as it did when there were only four playoff teams. Dustin, he slid multiple ideas in there on that one. Let's start with this. 12-team playoffs for the next decade. You for that?
I think this is one of the commandments. It's the next one, I think. I'm okay with it as long as you give those teams that have a bye one home game. I think that in addition to getting a bye, and again, we've talked about this, I sound like a broken record, 1-7, to me, just having extra time off is not an advantage. Maybe you save yourself of having a player get injured or something like that, but by and large, it just hasn't been beneficial the first 2 years. I think if you paired that with at least a home game, you get a home field advantage and extra rest time, I think that would be more beneficial. I'm actually in favor of 16. I think it's just nice and easy and clean, and you just pit number one against number 16, two against 15, so on and so forth, just like you'd see in an NCAA March Madness regional bracket. So I don't dislike the idea, but if you're going to do 12 teams, then I think more on-campus games. And like I said, I think that's actually the next commandment, so I'm getting ahead of the ship here.
You are, Dustin. Just cool your jets there, buddy. We'll get there. I'm with you, though. I was a little surprised when they initially went to 12. You know, it gave the top four teams a bye. Why not just go to 16 and make, you know, that first round definitely give the top eight teams a bye? And, you know, again, we'll hit that number two with the, you know, could you do multiple rounds of home games, which I think, yes, you can. But they also tied in here the January 8th finish. I think that's one of the things, too, that has not gone over well, that by stretching this out from the beginning of December to the end of January, teams are getting too much time off. The teams with byes get a couple weeks off. They're rusty, as you pointed out. Those teams have been 1-7 in their first round games after a bye. Just, it doesn't work out. Why not get to, you know, just 16 teams? And I'll tell you one other reason why 16, Dustin. Previously, we always debated, it was difficult to get four teams who you thought could be national champions.
Yeah.
These last 2 years, you start getting to the point where, yeah, there is some argument at 12-13. You had a Miami team that was seeded 10th that made it to the championship game, rightfully so. They played really well to get there, and there was debate about them even making it that they squeezed in over Notre Dame.
Right, yeah, and the further you expand this and the more that NIL comes into the picture, like you could have more teams each year that are in the field. And the other part, too, is, you know, you give other teams, like, I know Indiana was a one seed, but is there another team out there that could, you know, given the investment, given the right coach, another team that could emerge as, I don't know about a power, but have a few good, you know, years in there where they're competitive. So I think expanding it to 16 and I also think it would probably help, and maybe this is just wishful thinking. I think maybe the more teams you include, and I'm not saying to go to 24, but maybe if you do get to 16, maybe there's at least a little bit of incentive then to schedule some tough non-conference games, at least one, because maybe that puts you over the edge. Right now with 12, it seems like just get your three non-conference wins and then move into conference play, and that's all that matters. I still think that would be largely true. But if you went to 16 and you're looking at one extra conference team getting in, maybe does that strength of schedule play a little bit more of an impactful role if you're 13 through 16? But, you know, Iowa's a good example. They play Iowa State every year. I don't know that there's a benefit to playing Iowa State, but if you have that, and let's just throw Penn State out there, if all things are equal and you have Iowa's non-conference schedule from last season versus Penn State's from last season, who do you think deserves the opportunity to play? Probably Iowa, as long as they don't go 1-2, but that's just my opinion on it. So that's where I think it could be beneficial there as well.
And there you go, Dustin, getting ahead of things here. There is something where they do address out of conference. So we'll get to that conversation. here is the
this is one giant commandment for me.
It is all in one. Could get this show done in 5 minutes, right?
There we go. Yeah, exactly.
All right, number two, quarterfinals shall be played at campuses. The semifinals shall be at two New Year's Day bowl games, one of which shall annually be the Rose Bowl. And Army-Navy shall be moved to the early January 1 window leading into that. That's like four things in one. Dustin, what do you think?
No. Can I just end with no? So I agree with the quarterfinals should be played. So that would be the first two rounds. So the first round of, in my head, 12 or 16, and then the quarterfinal round of eight, you move and you play those on campuses. In total agreement with that. Semifinals, two New Year's Day bowl games. I don't think one of them has to be the Rose Bowl. I don't care about that. If you want to do it, great. If not, but Army, the only reason I'm saying you don't play Army-Navy on January 1st leading into those games, golly, the dog is just great at lapping up water in the middle of a point. What if Army or Navy is in the playoff? Like what? There's nothing that says they can't participate, right? So I still think if you could find a way to move the regular season back a week, you could play Army Navy either on that old conference championship day or Thanksgiving weekend or something, to where it's still maybe and has its own day. So maybe it still, you know, has the prestige and it's maybe not standalone, but it's one of the few games played on a certain day. I don't like the idea of moving that to January 1st. Because with the expanded field, we've seen in the past, like there's Army teams that have gone 11-1 or a Navy team that goes 10-2. They could very much be in the field. So I don't like that part of it.
And especially if it gets expanded to 16 teams, right. You know, there is a shot at it. A couple things on all of this. I do like quarterfinals on campus. The more games on campus, the better. And I think you and I have talked about that a lot. But it, again, a lot of these things that I say, Dustin, they reflect, I think, what the fans would like. And that's never even considered. And I'll hit upon, not only is it, you know, I think better TV if they're played on campus, but think of the fans of these teams. If you had 16 teams and every game had to be a road game, you're asking a lot of the fans, a lot of traveling. Yeah. But if you make those home games, if you as a team earn the higher bid, you earn home field advantage, your fans now get that opportunity. I'm going to hit on a couple more points on this one, Dustin, when we come back right after this.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two of our show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. Dustin, we're looking at this Stuart Mandel's 10 Commandments to improve college football. We're all the way up to point number two. He includes like three or four different points in one. Quarterfinals of the playoffs should be played on campus. We're in great agreement with that. The semifinals should be at the two New Year bowl games. I'm okay with that. I don't care about any of the bowl games. It's a college football playoff game. And they even go so far, one of them should annually be the Rose Bowl. I can't tell you how much I don't care about the Rose Bowl. I don't care about the sunset at halftime or whatever. Don't care, Dustin. I don't care.
So it's a third quarter, Jim. Get it correct.
My dad. Oh, in that case, I understand.
Yeah, exactly.
It's ridiculous that they cater to these bowl games. Someone's getting paid off somewhere to make that happen, Dustin. Don't like it. Don't like it at all. And it might even be my resentment with the Rose Bowl. When Penn State moved into the Big Ten, there were Big Ten teams who preferred winning the Rose Bowl to winning a national championship. We Penn Staters never understood the logic there. So,
well, some of us, Jim, didn't have the prestige or the program to win a national championship, so the Rose Bowl was the best thing.
It was the next best thing, then.
Exactly. The one thing I would also say is I'm surprised more schools don't push for that, because the reason I say that is because I feel like you see this with in the profession. I don't know about the NFL, but I know MLB and NBA teams do this, where if you are a team, and you're not going to have a problem with this at Ohio State or Michigan or Penn State, but at some of these other schools, say Indiana, Tulane, you could also do a thing where if you purchase season tickets, then you get playoff priority. So you don't have to necessarily put a payment down in for those playoff games, but you could say, hey, if you buy season tickets at this price or whatever, when we sell playoff tickets, if it happens this season, you get first in line. And that may be because each team is going to also designate X amount of seats. So if it's at Penn State, maybe opposing fans get access to 7,500 tickets, whatever the case might be. Well, you get first priority for those 7,500. And if it's a home game, you can expand it further and say all season ticket holders get first playoff priority. So I'm surprised. I mean, I'm sure these schools, the TV money is ridiculous, but I'm sure some of those schools would like to have that extra playoff money as well. And then it incentivizes more people to buy season tickets, because you could say, hey, we think, you know, I'm going to use Illinois last year as an example. Now, I know they didn't make the playoff, but last year there was a lot of, you know, hype around that Illinois team. A lot of people thought that could be, you know, basically the Indiana of 2024. So maybe there's a little bit extra money that's pouring in because people are saying, hey, we got a good shot to get to the playoff. I'm going to buy season tickets instead of just two games this year, because if we host a playoff game, I want to be there. So I'll be surprised if at some point schools don't try to figure that part of it out.
I'm with you. There's great incentives you could create for the home fans. The last part of this, number two in his commandment, was play the Army-Navy game over New Year's. I think I understand what he's trying to do there. I kind of like the idea. And he even says, hey, if they do make the playoffs, you could substitute Air Force in. Candidly, you know, the chances of Army, Navy making the playoffs are not good. But I think just for, you hate telling those two teams, we don't think you have a shot at the playoffs. I do think that they could do something either at the end of the regular season, or I've even suggested to start the year.
Yeah.
And somehow make it, if not exclusive, but one of the few games that are on TV. It's too important a game, you know, to
right.
pass.
You don't
want
to jeopardize it. Yeah.
No. All right. Let's get to number three. All West Coast Power Conference schools shall return to the Pac-12 immediately, restoring the sport to five power conferences. What do you think?
Yes. I'm a big fan of that, because it's never going to happen, but I'm a big fan of like Pac-10/Pac-12, Big 10, Big 12. Like 10 to 12 conference teams seems to be the correct number to me. Cause now you're dealing with cross country flights, and you talk about, like, I understand too that the cool thing is that Penn State got to host Oregon, and that was a new team. And so you get to see teams that maybe you don't otherwise get to see. But I think if you minimize the conferences, you could go back to eight conference games, and then you could, again, here comes into the scheduling of scheduling another Power Five team that you maybe don't see. Penn State did it with West Virginia. They did it with Auburn. You know, there's plenty of other schools. You know, Ohio State played Texas. So there's still going to be opportunities, but I would be a big fan of just all conferences going back to what they were in 2013. I think that was before Maryland and Rutgers joined the Big Ten, who have brought nothing, by the way.
Well, Josh Pate just put something out, you know, reimagining conferences, and it's included here too. The the ACC teams that came from the West Coast, Cal and Stanford, send them back also. Yeah. Get back to the geographic. The problem is, teams, I don't care where you are, we want to be in the Southeast Conference or the Big Ten because that's where the biggest paychecks are.
Right.
Until they reach the point where there's almost like that central television money that no matter what Power Five conference you're in, you get the same TV revenue.
Yeah.
Or comparable. It'll never happen, but it is what would make sense. And there is a guy, I believe it's one of the guys who big donors for Texas Tech. He's pushing for that and doing it with Congress. I would like to see. Now, it's essentially the NFL model where it doesn't matter what division you're in. They have the NFL itself has the TV contract. So it's not based on conferences the way it is now. All right, let's get to the next commandment. Thou shalt have centralized non-conference scheduling. Following the national championship game, the czar will assign each Power 5 team one Power 5 opponent with a similar record, one high-level G5 opponent, and one low-level G5 or FCS opponent. All shall be played at home stadiums, not neutral sites. This kind of hits what you were talking about with those out-of-conference games. How do you get those to still have some meaning to them? And the only way to keep teams doing like what Penn State has done, scheduling cupcakes, is to have somebody scheduling games for them.
Yeah. And I would like this model a lot. I think there's still going to be some, obviously there's still going to be some complaints, and it depends on what your, what your school and what your department is able to accomplish. Like, there's going to be, if for example, some team played, if Auburn gets to play Rutgers and LSU has to play Ohio State, well, it's not exactly an apples to apples comparison, but at least you're still, it's not loading up on Villanova, Nevada, some of those lower level teams. So I'm in favor of some sort of structure where, and maybe you could do it by place of finish the previous year. I don't know how you would, accomplish that, but I'm in favor of, some sort of general schedule across college football where this is what you're doing in the non-conference. This is how you have to schedule. So you get one G5 or one FCS, you get one, Power Four, and then you get however it's going to work out. I've been in favor of that for a long time. And even if conferences, I don't know, you can't even it out quite the same way, but even if conferences just came to an agreement, we've talked about a Big Ten SEC challenge, something along those lines that could fill in and help out this scheduling discrepancy.
Well, here's my only issue with it, and I like the concept, but we've been talking about Penn State and how bad their out-of-conference schedule has been and is. Here's the thing, though, Dustin. That's not the biggest variable to their schedule. It's not. It's within their conference. Well, last year, they played Oregon. They played Ohio State. They played Indiana. They play none of those teams this coming season.
Right.
That's the bigger discrepancy than them scheduling West Virginia in their out-of-conference. And I think if you got back to, the Power Five conferences where you have fewer teams, in fact, when you were talking about they could maybe get back to an 8-game schedule, I'd like to see 10-team conferences. You play the other 9 teams, and then you have 3 out-of-conference games. And I think even just saying, hey, you got to make one of those a Power Four or Power Five team. That rule alone will mean, hey, Iowa's got Iowa State. South Carolina's got Clemson. Georgia's got Georgia Tech. You don't want to take those rivalry games away either by, forcing some other kind of schedule. So I think you could get away with that, Dustin.
Yeah, I think so for sure. Yeah, if you can figure out a way, I mean, it's never, again, I don't think it's going to happen, but if there was a way to go back down to X amount of teams and then you could per conference and then you could even out and balance the schedule, I think that would be a huge help because you're only playing half the teams. And so you're playing half the teams in the conference. So it's really difficult to create a balance when you've got so many teams. So somebody's always going to come out ahead and somebody's always going to be behind the eight ball, making it more challenging to make a college football playoff run.
Well, I think they could even within the conference, like you said, and they don't need to put the schedules out year, 2 years ahead of time. Maybe it's based on last year's results. You know, if you're Purdue, you get an easier schedule than what Indiana would get.
Sure.
Which I think is what the NFL does. You know, your schedule is based on your record from the previous season. So you would play tougher teams that'd be better matchups. All right, Dustin, that is just about it for quarter number two. We still have more commandments to get to. And the next one it talks about NIL opportunities, and I'm a little confused on this one. Maybe you, Dustin, a really smart guy, you could help me out. You could help me figure this one out. We'll do that right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. This is quarter number three of our show. We are looking at real nice, fun article came out in The Athletic where Stuart Mandel, college football writer, came out with his 10 commandments for improving college football. And we're up to number five, Dustin. And this one is, there shall be no limits on how much players can earn from outside NIL opportunities and no need to send anything through the NIL Go, the platform for athletes to report third-party NIL deals. And in return, players shall only be allowed to transfer and play immediately once in their careers. Saying that they can make anything that they want from NIL, I thought that's already been established.
Yeah, it has. The one thing is that Jim, that would, I don't even know what I was trying to say. I just couldn't talk. I think I was having a stroke there. To me, what they have to do now is basically it has to be legitimate. It can't be like fraudulent. And I wonder if what he's saying here is like, you can basically get any NIL opportunity without it being questioned. So if some donor wants to give you $3 million just because, he can give you $3 million just because, which by the way, I don't understand why people, whatever, that's a different conversation for a different day. I'm never giving an athlete that much money, but, don't hate the idea, but then aren't you just getting back to the old school, like basically we're going to pay to buy a recruit? I mean, so it's going to be the same thing. If you're going to do that, that's fine, but I would say no transferring. Or if you do transfer, you're losing a year of eligibility. You have to sit out a year. If you're going to make it like that free for all, then you're either at that school permanently or you can transfer once, but you have to sit out a year. There's got to be consequences to something.
I think what this is the way to sneak that one transfer rule in. And it's one of the things, Dustin, that has bothered me so often. We're hearing that so often. Well, there should only be one transfer. Great. Yeah, that sounds fine. No way you get that through the court system. You know, right. I, as a player, you should have that freedom, just like any other, you know, student, to transfer from school to school. Now, I imagine where they're headed with this, even though they don't say it, is collective bargaining. You know, there has to be that point where,
yeah.
And trust me, where whenever they get there, they're going to run into trouble. Someone's going to want to transfer a second time and say, who is that nebulous group to tell me I can't transfer? You know, it'll right. still go to the courts. I think this having things, the NIL opportunities, go through some clearinghouse, if even if not perfect, at least to give the sense of, no, you can't have a bazillionaire just hand the kid $5 million and go from there without it, someone flagging it, so that there's at least some guide rails, Dustin.
Yeah. So here's what I don't understand. And maybe it's because collectively this is all under, I don't know if it's under the NCAA or under the college football playoff, whatever it, but when people say that to me about, in terms of, you can't transfer when it, people sign non-compete clauses all the time. Couldn't you write up something similar to a non-compete and say, hey, this is how it's going to work. And after, if you, again, after you agree to this, let's say contract, for lack of a better term, once you agree to this contract, you can transfer, but the non-compete says you can't play for 12 months or you can't go to another school in the conference. Like, I don't understand how that, like, I don't understand how a non-compete is legal, but like saying you can't transfer is not legal. I don't, but I'm not a lawyer, nor do I have any anything close to the same training or intelligence level.
Well, Dustin, it's interesting you bring this up, and it's a conversation for another show. But one of the conversations we've had is having these where there's a buyout clause, just like mm-hmm. with the coaches. And the best example of this was Brendan Sorsby, who left Cincinnati to go to Texas Tech. And there was allegedly a $1 million buyout in his multi-year contract with Cincinnati. And I was like declaring that that's the wave of the future. That's the way it has to go. There's, you know, that compensation. Well, guess what? Yep. Brendan Sorsby is now refusing to pay that, and they're taking, and Cincinnati is suing him for that money. So apparently these contracts, which should be bulletproof, they are not, or at least we're going to find out. I hope not, so much because, you know, nothing against Brendan Sorsby, but I hope Cincinnati wins this.
Yeah, me
so
too.
There's, the precedent is set. You sign a contract that says there's $1 million buyout. Guess what? There's $1 million buyout. This whole thing about, you know, credibility, morality, you sign your name to something, you stick to it, all that kind of good stuff. I'd kind of like to see that back in vogue, Dustin. All right, let's move on to the next one. This should be an easy, quick one. Players shall have 5 years to play five full seasons, no red shirts, no waivers, maximum age 23.
Just going right on in on it. I don't hate a lot of that, but I still am traditional, and I say 4-5 years to play four full seasons. You can use a red shirt if something happens, and I don't even hate the rule of, you know, I got 10 games in and I suffered a, you know, torn ACL, and I'm talking basketball, sorry, 10 yeah. games in or 5 games in and suffered a torn ACL, whatever the number is. Maybe if you have half a season or if you play half a season or less, or whatever the case might be, a third of the season, you can still get a medical red shirt. So you've played, you can have 4 full seasons in 5 years. But after that, no, there's no medical redshirt. There's no guys that are in college for 7 years. The maximum age of 23, I think, is good. I still would say you have four years to play 5 full seasons. That's that you can still use a redshirt. You can still do a medical redshirt, but you can't get multiple of those. You get one opportunity, and that's it.
What I like about the 5 years, 5 seasons. is it just takes away the gray area, the, you know, the red shirt. Oh, you get a red shirt if you, but you could play four games. Well, boy, is that fair to the guy who played, you know, first play of the fifth game, he breaks his leg. Just to me, what I like about this is it's clean. 5 years, five seasons, fine. Just because we're getting closer and closer to that anyway with the rules. And I don't like teams manipulating when a guy could play. Gee, now we have to have a rule that the playoffs don't count against you on your redshirt year, all of that. Just give them 5 years. You know, just be done with it. That's my feeling on it. I like that it's easy. Now, they do put in the one exception for either a religious mission or military service after high school. That should allow you to go beyond age 23. Again, the only thing it sounds fair. The only thing I don't like about it is, again, you're starting to create a potential for a gray area. What constitutes a religious mission? Or, you know, somebody's going to find a loophole somewhere. And that's why I like 5 years, five seasons, be done with it. All right, let's get to commandment number 7. Coaches shall be required to remain with their teams through the duration of their season, however long it lasts. Contacting a coach about a job during the season shall be treated the same as tampering with an athlete. This is also known as the Lane Kiffin rule.
That is 100% what that is. Yeah, I don't hate that. I actually don't necessarily have a problem with the schools contacting other coaches, because you've got to be able to have some sort of plan in place, but absolutely not should a coach be able to leave during the season. And I know that you could probably say, again, the freedom of movement and all that stuff, what's going to stop him. I think, and Lane Kiffin, I think, is going to be, because a lot of these guys care about themselves, but Lane Kiffin's the one that cares about himself more than any of the others. I do think at some level, when you have a wide open playing field, the places where this is going to matter, you're not going to see, like, Kurt Cignetti could get a call from Miami. He's not going to leave. Why would you? You just won a national champion. You know what I mean? Like a lot of places aren't, if you think you can win a national championship there and you're in the playoff hunt regularly, I don't know why you're moving on in the middle of this. Like, I don't think the Lane Kiffin thing is going to be a regular occurrence. I really don't. So I don't know that one's as big of a deal to me. That's just my opinion. I don't think you should be able to leave in the middle of your season at any point. But then again, I mean, guys get fired in the middle of the season. So I have less of a problem with that one, if I'm being honest.
Well, here's the thing, too. And I think you're right. And we saw it this season, especially at Penn State, who looked for people like Cignetti, Mike Elko, who weren't going to leave their schools. And I think it's for the very reason you talked about. Hey, I could win at Indiana. I could win at Texas A&M. And oh, by the way, my agent let them know that Penn State's interested, so I could get a raise here also. Right. Okay. So that's good. The other part to this, Dustin, is I don't think this should depend on some kind of overall rule. It should just be in the contract. So I could fire you mid-season, but guess what? You had a contract. I owe you that money. The reverse should be the case, where it should be in there. If you want out of this 5-year contract after 2 seasons or after 3 seasons, there's a buyout penalty you have to pay. Well, how about just making it, you know what? If you leave between seasons, it's X dollars. To leave during the season, it's 3X. It's 3 or 4 times what it would cost you to leave after the season. I think that would very much change these coaches' ideas about leaving in mid-season and fix it. We have a saying, Andy Shea no matter what the question is, typically the answer is money.
Yeah, right.
And this is the situation again. Put it in the contract, the financial penalties. All right, one more segment to go, Dustin. We'll do that right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to quarter number four of the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Dustin. We're talking about some ideas for fixing college football. Not that it's necessarily broken, but there are some things that could be improved. We went through seven of the 10. Let's see if we could get through the last three. Here we go, Dustin. Any Power 5 game airing exclusively on a streaming service, such as Peacock, shall be simulcast on an over-the-air network in the two schools' home states. Also, a school's road game may not kick off later than 9 p.m. back home. What do you think?
So the first part of this, yes, I would agree with the airing of those games. If it's going to be on Peacock or something else, that it then is aired on, you know, if it's Purdue and Penn State are playing, then that game is going to air on NBC in Indiana and Penn State. It is essentially what the NFL does. If you want to watch all the games, you can buy NFL Sunday ticket. But you get your locally televised game every week. That's your team, your state, that's what you get. So I'm in favor of that. A school's road game may not kick off later than 9 p.m. I actually have less of a problem with that in football than I do in like basketball, just because those games can get so late in basketball and you have weeknight games. In football, it's going to be a Friday or Saturday night. So you've got an entire weekend. And then if I'm a West Coast school and I see that, I'm like, well, okay, but then I have to kick off at 9 a.m. and that could be an advantage for them. And I don't get a chance to, you know, kick off. So I would say if you want to do that, then maybe make it a window where it's kickoff has to be between 12 and 8 p.m. But I actually don't think that that's much of an issue. I think it's just, you know, East Coast schools and on the Eastern time zone are going to get ticked off that they have an 11 o'clock kickoff or 10 o'clock kickoff when they head out west. People on the West Coast are going to be PO'd when they have to get up at 8 or 9 a.m. for a kickoff, you know, in Bloomington, Indiana. So I'm okay with a time zone thing, but it's got to be fair for everybody. And so everybody has to kick off between noon and 9 in their own time zone. You're not going to have that problem a lot, by the way. It's only going to be the West Coast schools really that are the issue.
And you could fix that if you follow some of these other rules about setting up a Pac-12 conference. I do kind of like it. You know, that 9 p.m. back home, the only time it would happen is we here on the East Coast are 3 hours ahead of the West Coast. So if they start a game out there at 6 p.m., it's 9 p.m. here, it's only a 7 or 8 o'clock kickoff on the West Coast that would violate this rule. I kind of like it. You would think, though, that within conferences, you know, the ACC and the Big Ten, that they would be able to police that themselves within,
right?
Like in the West Coast teams, if they, you know, to outlaw West Coast teams from playing 9 a.m., what for them is 9 a.m. Yeah. on the East Coast, that shouldn't be that tough to police it. As a fan, I never lived on the West Coast, but I would not have a problem with this waking up, turning on my TV at 9 a.m. for college football.
Yeah, I should have been more specific. I would have less of a problem with it as a fan because I like drinking coffee. Like, those London games are great. You get up, drink your coffee, watch football. I would think I would have a problem with it if there was a rule in place for that and I was a coach or a player on a West Coast team and I had to do that.
Yeah, exactly. It's an unfair, it's a competitive disadvantage for a West Coast team to come east, play a noon Eastern, 9 a.m., Pacific time. All right, here's one. Number nine. All conferences shall publish an officiating report within 2 hours of the game ending with explanations for the three most controversial calls. And all conferences shall air replay deliberations live during broadcast, which the ACC did for certain games last season.
Yep. I'm in favor of that. I like what the ACC does because then you at least get an explanation and some sort of thought process and it doesn't feel arbitrary, because there's a lot of times when it's like, what was he officially been looking at in the replay? You have replay and you don't. So I agree with that. I like that. All conferences should publish. So the three most controversial, that's
who decides.
Correct. There could be 10 controversial calls. So what I would do instead is, whether it's before or after coaches' availabilities, the officials must speak with the press for X amount of time. They're available for 15 minutes after the game at this window. And that way reporters can ask questions. What were you thinking on this call? What's the rule for this call? That gives them some level of accountability. So that's what I would do. I don't think you need the three most controversial calls because, again, there could be a game where there's one controversial call. Like, there's some games that are officiated really well or don't need great officiating. Like, if there's a game that's 52-0, who the hell cares? But there's other games where it feels like eight calls are bad and missed. Yeah. So just make the officials speak with the – and they can even have a representative there. Like, the head lead official from the booth comes down and he's the main guy and then the other officials are there with him. But 15 minutes, you have to explain your calls if reporters have questions. If not, then – so be it.
Just be accountable is, I think, what you're saying. And sometimes I think you just have to say, you know what? We didn't get that one right. And that happens. I mean, as a player, as a coach, sometimes that's the best answer when you didn't make a great call. And now, I don't know if, Dustin, you've seen any spring baseball games where they have the ABS system in place where players could appeal ball strike call. And apparently there's been a couple of games where the umpire has just been so bad that they're constantly, and if you're correct, you don't lose your appeal. So as long as you're right, you can keep appealing it. And I heard some people being real sympathetic to the umpires. Gee, it's a tough job. I don't care. You're a professional. You're at the top of the game. If you screw up, you screwed up.
Yep.
And I think if you miss one call because the ball's outside by an inch, fans aren't going to crucify you. But if you're missing things that are a foot outside, you should be called to task for it. And the second thing, the ACC, where they had the discussions on plays that go to the booth. Mm-hmm. Dustin, I only saw a couple games, ACC games, where that was there. It did exactly what you said. You got exactly what they were talking about, and it made you, because oftentimes the announcers are guessing what they're looking at, and they're not right, okay? But when you hear the conversation, you're a lot more forgiving. It's like, okay, we saw this here. We didn't see it on that replay. I would love to have that, Dustin.
One other thing I would add to that one is, and I don't know what the specifications would be. I haven't thought this one through because I didn't see this list until this morning. So I haven't thought this all the way through, but catch, no catch would come to mind. Replays should be viewed in real time, because you can slow anything down to make it look like a catch or a non-catch. And it's not meant to be officiated down to the gnat's ass, if you forgive my language, in terms of catch and no catch, right? So, like, certain things like that, I think, okay, we'll review this, but it's going to be viewed in real time. And if we blatantly miss something, then we can correct it. But we're not going to slow it down and say, oh, gee, was he kind of juggling? Because you can form the opinion one way or another. So, and I think you could get through it faster that way too, right? Like sometimes you miss something and it's just obvious. Like, okay, yeah. Missed that one. Let's fix it. We don't need to spend 3 hours at the monitor reviewing and slowing down into thousands of seconds in replay to determine if something is a catch or a non-catch. If you want to do that with like out of bounds, is the toe in or not? Like that doesn't change. You know what I mean?
It's black and white.
That doesn't have to necessarily be viewed in real time to get it right. You can slow that one down. So there should be, I would say most things probably need to be viewed in real time. There are still some things that you can probably slow it down. But that's one thing I would also add to that is that most replays or specific replays have to be viewed in real time. You can't slow it down.
What I will add to that is I don't mind as much that they're slowing it down as long as it's understood. Hey, you know, I'm slowing it down so much that could alter the opinion. I want to hear them conclude more often. Boy, this one's so close. It could go either way. How is it called on the field? That's what I'm going with. I would like to hear that as the conclusion. All right. Speaking of conclusions, here's the 10th of the 10 commandments to improve college football. Finally, the committee shall not conduct another Tuesday night ranking show for eternity. They don't like the ranking show. What about you, Dustin?
I don't really like it either. What I would do if I was college football, though, is I would do it like, so NFL games start at 1 p.m. Eastern time. If I'm ESPN, I'd air that sucker for a half an hour at 11:30 on Sunday before you get to your NFL coverage. It doesn't need to be a Tuesday night. I agree. Like, it doesn't need to be an hour show. It doesn't need to be a Tuesday night thing. I think there is still some interest to maybe get some opinions from analysts and people who cover the sport and people who are in the committee room and get some explanations there. But I think it would be much more beneficial to do that. All right. Morning after the games, what's our instant reaction? Or maybe not instant reaction, but you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's immediate. We don't have to wait till Tuesday. We're going to air this thing at 11:30 AM right before we get to our NFL coverage. I think that would do good numbers. And I think that then you're not sitting around for 3 days trying to guess where they're going to be ranked.
So your issue is more with Tuesday than it happened. See, I didn't know if the commandment was just in general, they don't want the ranking.
I don't need the show personally, but I think there are people out there that like to just have a ranking show as some, but it doesn't have to be this premiere. I don't think it's a premiere event. If it was on Sunday when nothing else is on, Jim, I would probably watch it. But it's on Tuesday night, and I'm either watching a movie, watching a basketball game, something else is occupying my time. I have no interest. I can see it on Twitter.
I never actually watch it. I can just tell me what it is. Right. I'm good. I didn't know if they're saying they didn't want them to do this ranking, you know, during the season, which I think they need to do it to kind of let everybody know. Let them be accountable also for what their thoughts are. Let me know if I'm in or if I have to do more to improve. All right, that's it, the final word. Dustin's going to be off for a couple weeks taking care of basketball. Dustin, enjoy March Madness, and we'll see you all next week on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.